Hello, everybody. It is time. Oh, I know. You cannot depend.
You can depend on your preacher.
Oh, yeah, you can depend on your preacher.
You can depend on politicians.
Politicians, no, you can't depend on them. Welcome in, everybody. It is time for Three Guys Before the Game. Tony Caridi, Brad Howe, Hoppy Kercheval. Oh, yes, another guy is going to be joining us again. We are once again in our Chris Collinsworth slide-in edition of Three Guys Before the Game. Nathan Adrian will join us here in midstream, and we will talk West Virginia University basketball. And we begin with West Virginia University football. Last week was a busy one, obviously. We did three episodes of our program as West Virginia was in the process of hiring a new coach. And over the last several days, it has all happened. Neil Brown is WVU's new head football coach, and we will be talking about that hire and more coming up on our program here. And we'll get the specifics and the details as the week goes on. We're understanding that the official press conference will be Thursday morning at 11 a.m. here in Morgantown, and all of the pieces will start to come together. In between all of that, we've got basketball. West Virginia now 0-2 in the league, getting ready to go to Kansas State. We'll talk with Nathan about that. So, first off, we begin with football. Gentlemen, it looked as though the hire of Neil Brown from afar was an absolute strategic bang right at the target. I don't know if you could have done it better. If you're just looking from afar and knowing what the obstacles are when hiring a football coach nowadays and how these things normally go, this thing was perfect. Agree, disagree. Please infer.
Yeah, I mean, perfect is strong, but I would say they did it right. They did it by the book. And we've seen a lot of bad process hires of how they're done. You wonder, like, how did that happen? Or just where things get out of control. But WVU and Shane Lyons and E. Gordon Gee, but primarily athletic department, they were prepared for this. I talked to Shane Lyons on my public affairs program. And
you still doing that show?
Yeah, I do, Monday through Friday. And I said, how long had you been on Neil Brown? He said, a couple of years. A couple of years. He had been looking at Neil Brown. He had watched some of his games. He'd watched his press conferences. So Neil Brown was always a guy that was targeted by Shane Lyons, and Shane Lyons and his team had done their due diligence for a couple of years. That's impressive, Tony. I know you and I were arguing the other day, and I think you said, like, well, it's a roll of the dice. I know what you meant. But every hire has a certain element of risk, but you reduce your risk by doing your legwork, which WVU clearly did. And they did it quickly. They got out, they did the interviews, and they got the thing knocked out. They announced it. There wasn't controversy. They got the term sheet done. They got it done in about a week, a little less than a week. That's impressive.
That's why I called it perfect, because it just doesn't happen that way. You can look at the girl and say, that's the girl that I want to take to the prom, and it's all worked out, and you have your people talk to her people, and then when it comes time to it, she goes like, nah, I ain't going with you. And something always seems to happen. So in the course, we were here last Monday, right? We were talking about, is it smoke or is it fire? And then so the fire started, and then it was over with. And then last night, he's in the team room talking with his team. That's 6 days. That's 6 days from might be leaving to he's gone, and you hired a football coach.
Yeah, so there's a lot there to unpack. So a couple things that Hoppy said. Yes, we've seen bad process hires. In fact, you don't have to go back far. Just the last time West Virginia did this was about as polar opposite as this can get, about as bad a job of hiring somebody and forcing it into a position with that ridiculous coach in waiting that was not working. It was a debacle last time. So in comparison to that, this was perfect. I said on this show last week, I thought this was an opportunity for Shane to unite the fan base for the first time in a long time. I think without question, you're seeing that play out. This has not only been a great hire at this point, as we sit here in January, among local media, national media, and basically across the entire fan base. You're seeing a guy that is universally respected from the coaching side of things, and also from just a fit of a human being standpoint. The way he left, that attention of that video of him talking at halftime, has done a ton for Neil Brown's reputation before he even got here in the state of West Virginia. So process-wise, from that standpoint, It was perfect. And that was the list we've talked about. If you're a good AD, Shane, you do exactly what Shane Lyons did. It's not just that list with a couple names on there. It's binders full of information, and you're watching things like he alluded to on your show, watching press conferences, watching tape when you can, and keeping your finger on the pulse. That's why Shane Lyons is paid a lot of money, right? Not just to run the school he's at, but have an eye towards what happens in the future. So I think I would side with you right now. As we sit today,
come on with me, Hoppy.
Again,
as of today,
you got to go win games. I mean, we'll move past this honeymoon phase. Everything's great. Neil Brown's a great guy. His teams are really good. We'll move past that once games start. But for right now, I think they did this as well as they could and got a guy that wanted to be here that you were interested in. That, because that's how searches fall apart. When your top couple of guys don't want to be here, then the thing starts to slide, then you start to scramble. That was not the case. You could tell they'd identified a couple of guys that wanted to be here. They went after him and got what seems like the number one target.
And we always talk about how, you know, there's a couple different levels and how is WVU perceived on the national level. And nationally, people knew that Neil Brown was a hot target. It was just a question of when. So when WVU gets him in a year where there weren't a lot of high-profile coaching jobs, nationally it's like, oh yeah, that's a good hire. Here's a guy who is peaking right now at that level, and West Virginia got him.
They did, and with that came the national applause from the big boys of college football that follow it and say, hey, you know, some guys are going out there and saying this could be the hire of the year as far as college football goes. We talked on one of the episodes last week that what you're looking for here as a school, as an athletic director, is someone and that can do everything that you need. So it's a hard job, but you get paid well. You got to coach a football team, right? You've got to administrate. You've got to put a staff together. You've got to be able to fundraise. You've got to be able to talk to people that are the whitest of the white collars and the bluest of the blue collars. You've got to have that ability, and some cannot pull that off. You've got to be as comfortable at the Mountaineer Caravan just elbow to elbow with folks as you are when you're talking with someone from a Fortune 500 company. It looks as though, and from what we hear from people that know Neil Brown, that he can do all of those things. And that personality generates interest, and that personality is what, as you said, Brad, brings things together. Hoppy, you did another poll on Twitter that I saw, and you said, okay, what's your position on the hire? Excellent was one of the categories.
Excellent, good, fair, poor.
And so excellent and good was like way over 80%, right?
Oh, excellent was 80-some percent, and good was, you know, 10%. But the excellent to good was like 95, 97%. And to Brad's point, that tells you that, and this is a process, ultimately you are judged on wins and losses. I know we're going to get into that. But you have won the press conference with this hire, because there were other people, you know, people talked about Rich Rod and people talked about Tony Gibson. And that would not have, you wouldn't have won the press conference with that. I know that because you would have had a divided fan base. But the fan base looks at this and goes, yeah, that's a good hire. So you start from a position of strength. What happens is going to happen, but it's a good start. It's a really good start.
Yeah, absolutely.
Those are hard to get to. Don't underestimate how hard that is to get that position that West Virginia sits in now for the next however long it is until the game kicks off. That is a really hard thing to accomplish, where the majority of people go, yeah, okay, this looks really good. Let's get back on board and see how this goes. That's a difficult job, and they should be applauded for getting to that point now.
You remember I said the two biggest criteria that you have to have for a great leader? You don't remember, do you? I hit those with you.
Can I answer?
Oh, go ahead, but repeat that. That was good. I remember that.
I said, so this is off of literally over a million data points of entry from around the world, a global study. And they looked at leaders and what were the two biggest characteristics that successful leaders had. And they were inwardly sound and others focused. So in other words, do you have your stuff together or are you a dumpster fire? Because when people can see and perceive that you've got your stuff together, they're going to follow you more so than someone that is, they look at and go like, this person is going a bunch of different directions. And then others focused. In other words, it seems as though everyone that you talk to is that this guy has the ability to communicate and talk with you and make you feel that he is sincere in his communication with you. Then when you have that, then that translates into someone that will say, I'll follow this guy. And even in a conversation I had with someone this morning who just met him yesterday, he said to me that He said he met a staff member yesterday, and he said that he, in 5 minutes, had a conversation that was just like, whoa, with him. So those are all very much positive.
And I tell you, he knocked it out of the park. I guess we should use, instead of knocking out of the park, we should use he
took it to the house?
He took it to the house in the interview process with both Guy and his team and Shane Lyons and his team. He came in extremely well prepared. He'd seen West Virginia. He knew about the program. He knew about the personnel. He knew about specific players. So he came in, Brad, and really nailed the interview. And that's important, too, because if this is the guy you want, and then if you go into the interview and you go, he was okay, but the interview solidified where they thought, what they wanted to do. So that was huge.
Yeah, and I think that goes back to when you're looking to try and fit the two puzzle pieces together. That's the second part of it. Shane Lyons can want somebody all he wants, but the guy that he wants needs to want to be here for that to work. And it appears that that's the case. And that would make sense. Given what we'd said about Neil Brown's background, he'd won 10-plus games 3 years in a row at Troy. All due respect, that's about all you can do there if you're him. What else are you going to do other than try and keep it at that level? So it was time for West Virginia to move forward and get a new coach. It was time for Neil Brown to get a new challenge as well. That's why this thing on the surface, of all the, strip everything else away, just on the surface, that's why this makes a lot of sense right now.
And so last night, one of the meetings that he held, which is always the one that everyone will remember, the players that were in that team room, they always remember the first time the coach speaks to them. You can talk to players that were in the meeting room when Don Nealon took over, and the thing that I always hear about that meeting was Nealon walked in, some guys were slouching and some guys had feet up on chairs, and the first thing he looked at him and said, get your feet off the chairs and sit up straight. People are like, whoa, this is a little bit different, and they remember that. So you remember the first time. So now there's this process that goes on, an intangible process goes on now. They've heard him speak for the first time. And they're all kind of sitting there going like, what am I getting? Am I staying? Am I going? Is this going to be better for me or worse for me? You've got all of that going on. So now you've got this relationship building that begins right now. And with that comes, what are his staff members going, who are they going to be? And then those relationships, they become player to player, personnel, position by position. So that all happens now. That's very, very important.
Tony, Shane Lyons said, and he was in that meeting with the new coach and the players, lasted about 45 minutes. And according to Shane, Coach Brown said, this is a fresh start. You know, we're starting anew here. This is a clean slate. Well, you know, not everybody gets to start. So if you're a guy who's worked hard, that actually speaks to you. You know, like, okay, now I got a chance. That's first of all. Second of all, I think if you're a highly competitive athlete, and we'll talk to Nate in a minute, see what his take would be on that, is that what do you want? You want somebody who's going to coach you and help you be not only as good as you think you are, but maybe even better than you think you can be. And you want to win. So I think for an elite athlete, you can quickly turn and buy into a program if you believe that they have your best interest at heart, if you believe they have a good plan to win, you can get on board pretty quickly.
Well, you can, and you can also get some guys that may have felt they were overlooked or not getting a fair shake or in a semi-doghouse for whatever reason, wipes that slate clean. So it gives everybody a chance, just like the fan base starting anew, that everybody over in that building associated with that program, okay, button it up a little bit more. Here we go. We're starting fresh.
And obviously, offensively, they're going to be starting fresh with a new quarterback. Will it be Trey Lowe? Will it be Jack Allison? Do they have someone in their pocket that they may be bringing? There was the belief West Virginia was going to bring in a grad transfer that they were going to bring into the fold here, but now that goes away, and we'll see how that all shakes out. So if you're a player, you say, okay, what are you bringing to us? What can you do? What have you done? We know of one staff member for sure that is coming to WV with Neil Brown, and that's the defensive coordinator, and his name is Vic Koning. He is 58 years old. He will turn 59 next month. He has been around as a coach. He played at Kansas State. He was the most outstanding leader on that team as a senior. He was third on the team in tackles. He played two seasons in the USFL. So here's some of the numbers on him. He's the former defensive coordinator at Clemson. Back in 2005, the Tigers were rated 25th in the nation in scoring and total defense. In 2007, they were 9th in total defense. At Kansas State, after leaving Clemson, he was the assistant head coach, the co-defensive coordinator. The Wildcats' defense improved from 118 in the country to number 38. and 209. In 09, he was hired at Illinois with Ron Zook as the defensive coordinator. They improved from 91st to 38th and then to 7th in 2011. They allowed 292 yards per game, which was fourth nationally in pass defense. They were fifth in the nation in TFLs, ninth in sacks. And then he eventually took over for Zook after he was fired, coached one game in the bowl game. Hoppy, you probably remember the Kraft Fight Hunger Bowl, sure. and they did win. Then he went to North Carolina. He was an assistant head coach and defensive coordinator. In his first season, the defense finished third in the nation in TFLs, allowed just over 25 points per game. In 2013, they won six of their last seven, and in those six of the last seven, he held five opponents to 20 points or less. And in 2013, North Carolina allowed just 24 points per game, which was 48th in the nation. And then after that, 2014, he goes to Troy, and so far at Troy, they were 78th in the nation in defense in 15 his first year, in 16th they were 21st, in 17 last year they were 11th, and this past season they were 28th. So this dude's been around. He also had a stint at Wyoming, did not go well for him as a head coach there. He was 5-something, and they fired him after 2 years. But as far as coordinating defenses, big time good.
Big time good. And to back those stats up, and I won't bore you with more there. You gave a bunch of numbers there. If you dive into some of the advanced stats on this Troy team and program over the last couple of years, it's interesting because it's really defensive led more though, so than offensive. And that's what you hear about Neil Brown, offensive guy, knows offense. And I'm not saying that's not true, but this defensive profile of this program over the last few years has certainly been higher, at least statistically ranked, than the Troy offense has been during their run.
Guys, also, there was a feature in USA Today. It was a puff piece on Neil Brown from 2017, and Vic Koning was quoted. And Koning, as you said, has been around a long time, and he said that Brown works harder than any other coach he's ever been with. And Koning says, I get to work at 5:30 in the morning, and Brown is there. I leave at 9 at night, and he's still there. I tell you, I like that. Because coaches,
I know you like that, Dairy Farm boy. I mean.
Well, I think that the most successful coaches, among the attributes they have, is that they work all the time. Now, you can speak to whether that's beneficial for family life and a million other things, but I'm sorry, that's what it is. Because if you're working that hard and that smart, you're dotting the I's and crossing the T's. You're taking care of all of the details and improving your chances to win.
I don't think there's any question about that. That's well said. And quite frankly, flip it the other way. I don't think you can achieve great success without working hard.
Right, right.
And really in anything in life, but put that on football in particular. That is such a massive job with so many moving parts. If you're not fanatical about being in the office and working, it's just not going to top end work for you. And so that's a great starting point. And I know that should be something that's given. It's just not. So that's a good starting point for Neil Brown. A
couple of other notes here if you want some more stats. Turnover margin, they're very big in that. This past year, Troy was 11th in the nation in turnover margin. Last year, they were 26th in the nation. In 2016, they were 12th in the nation. So they do a really good job of holding on to the ball and possessing the ball. That is very, very key. They take great pride in their special teams. Kick returns this past year, they were 9th in the country. Last year, they were 2nd in the country. 2016, they were 37th in the country. Punt return this past season, they were 8th. Best in the country. So special teams are very, very big for them.
Special teams are big, and pass protection is big. Again, diving into some of these advanced numbers, their sack rate every year is really good. In fact, they've led the nation in sack rate on non-passing downs before. So again, this is a program under Neil Brown at Troy that has seemed really buttoned up the last 3 years. So again, good start moving forward as you look at what he may bring to West Virginia.
And as the week continues, we will find out, as I said, press conference on Thursday, who the other staff members are. That is very, very important, and what they're going to do in strength and conditioning as well. We talked about it during last week's shows that you do need, obviously, some West Virginia flavor that has a lay of the land within the program. We'll see how that does transpire. Any other comments on football, Hoppy?
Just that it was, in my reporting on it, just as you said, Tony, I think really impressed at how they did the process and what I heard over and over. I mean, there are multiple levels to this, about this being a good fit, that, you know, he's from Danville, Kentucky, or some part of Kentucky, but he grew up in Danville. I mean, that's a lot like us, if you will, you know, the Appalachian region, and he gets us. I think that for all of Dana's strengths, one of his weaknesses was it never felt like a really good fit for West Virginia or for him. I think it's a better fit for him in Houston. This, at the outset, just feels like, and the WVU officials believe this is a much better fit.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, for those of you watching on our video stream, hang on, don't do it yet. Can we get the camera ready? Here we go. Get the camera ready, please. Nathan's going to do the Chris Collinsworth slide. And here comes, there he is. Oh, yeah, very good. The Nathan, yeah, I like it. By the way, yeah.
Hey, Hoppy.
Hey, Hoppy. Hey, what's up, brother? What's going on? Yeah, there they are. Nathan Adrian, not a former Mountaineer. He is a Mountaineer. Mountaineer, because once a Mountaineer, always a Mountaineer.
Former so
Nathan,
standout.
Former Mountaineer standout, all Big 12
standout.
All Big 12 conference former. Honoree, both on the floor and in the classroom. As an you were an academic guy, too, weren't you?
Yeah.
What was
that's
that?
What they said.
What honor did you get?
I was a Big 12 Scholar Athlete of the Year.
The whole
How about
thing?
That?
Whole thing.
What was your GPA?
Well, the 1 year my senior is in grad school was a 4.0. Online sport and management.
I don't think you can ask him that. Isn't that
That's
kind
about
of
as hard as they get.
Isn't oh,
that,
I know.
Isn't that a
It was between me and Landon Lucas had a 3.8 in his MBA. I beat him with my sport management 4.0.
Well,
I'm glad you did because he used to flop all the time. Landon Lucas, Kansas, just flopping down all the time. I don't think you can ask him. That's like a HIPAA, FIPAA, WIPAA, DIPAA. You can't ask guys with GPA.
If a guy has a 4.0, you can ask him because they're anxious to tell you how to 4.0. If he had a 2.1 or a 1.8, maybe not so much.
That's a great honor, man. I forgot all about
I did too. I was more focused on your performance on the court there.
That was really
good. I'd forgotten that.
We're student athletes, Brad.
Winner off the court, winner off the court.
All right, so since the last time we got together, West Virginia has played its second league game in Austin, Texas on Saturday night. West Virginia down 6 at the break and come back and just get close but then can't finish. 61-54 is the final score. Second game in a row, and I don't think it really matters with this team anymore as to who starts, but the second game in a row that West Virginia's bench has had this just unbelievable category of outscoring the opposition. Saturday, it was 41-9. West Virginia's bench scored 41 of its 54 points, but again, I think that's just a little bit of a hybrid starting lineup that Bob Huggins used there, but we're 0-2 for the first time in Big 12 history. West Virginia has lost its Big 12 road opener, and things don't get easier. Wednesday night, the Mountaineers take on 0-2 Kansas State, and so someone is going to get a W, and that's going to be hard to get when you go into Manhattan because they played well at Texas Tech on Saturday. Nevertheless, Mr. Adrian, give me your perceptions from Saturday.
Well, it's hard to say that it was better than Texas Tech, but I think we are going in the right direction. We're starting to play a little bit more as a team. More people are involved, and the good news is that we're finally playing defense. Offense will eventually figure itself out, but they're playing hard on the defensive end and making it difficult on other teams, so that's going to lead you to win at least some games.
Yeah, I get the same sense. That's my same feel, that they are improving. They look more like what you would expect them to look like in regard to intensity and in regard to taking things seriously, and I don't mean that they were out there in the past not doing it, but getting it, understanding it, comprehending what it is. Now, the problem comes with talent in regard to we're not having certain guys produce at the level that they need to produce in order to win these games. You can play this level and win non-league games, but you can't have guys nights off. Right? And so, Brad, we always talked about this. Who's your third scorer? Because you could always go into the past and say, you know, these two guys are going to bring you this.
Right.
Who's the third one going to be tonight? Who's maybe? And that's where things are going down.
Yeah, and that hadn't been a surprise, though, right? I mean, that's what you've seen since the start of this season. So I think to flip that around as I watch these games, I've told you guys before, I'm under no illusions that this is a Big 12 title team for West Virginia. So I'm choosing to watch these, not so much in terms of wins or losses, but somebody show me something. What can I pull out from guys that you say, okay, that looked pretty good. So start with Derek Culver. I think, as we have thought, you have something in Derek Culver. There were times Saturday when you could see as that arena got a little bit louder and the intensity ratcheted up, he stuck his face right in there. He didn't shrink from that. He didn't run. He said, give me the ball, and got more aggressive. So I continue to like Culver. I thought Jordan McCabe showed me something Saturday. I don't know statistically if that was his best game of the year, but I felt like he looked more comfortable and played well in that game. So those were a couple things I pull out. As there continues to be guys that no show and are inconsistent, those are two that I thought kind of stood out to me like, okay, you have a couple little pieces there, or at least for, let me rephrase, at least for that night, because I knew you were going to call me on my own line there. No, I'm not going to project ahead to Wednesday or Saturday down the road. Just for that night, I saw Culver do it again. I saw McCabe look a little more comfortable.
Tony,
about that?
First of all, your bench stat is irrelevant, because that bench stat is only relevant when your starters are doing really well and the guys that come in score.
Right.
Okay,
you're absolutely
so you're. But I think there's unanimity here about Culver. But the question is then not only who's your 2 and 3, but who's the 2? Who's the other guy that's, if Culver's going to give you 18, who's the guy that gives you 15?
Well, you're getting greedy. You just got to your 1. Now you're getting greedy. Now you want a 2 and a 3. But I just found 1.
but you know, you know you got a skill level in some of these guys, Nate. But if Culver's going to give you 18, then where's the 15? Where's the 12? Where's the 10? You know, where does the scoring round out?
That's exactly right. And you can't have your seniors and juniors not showing up every game. Issa shows up. He had 10. It's not bad. Not great for him. Lamont goes 0-for again. Beadle played well, but again, they have to be more consistent. Lamont has to come in and make shots every single game, so people are going to guard him. And if you have him somebody sagging off of him now, then it's going to be a problem.
Yeah, foul trouble got Wesley Harris again. He falls out of the game. He only played 24 minutes. And I think his defense has been exceptional right now in these first two league games. But he struggled scoring the ball. He was 1 out of 6 from the field, 1 out of 3 from 3. And you're right. So the guys that have been around, it's Wes Harris, it's Issa Ahmad, it's Lamont West, Beadle as well. Among those four, just the way that the program's built, 3 of those guys have got to produce every single night.
Yeah.
Every single night, 3 of those guys, whomever they are, whatever combination, you've got to be able in order to win, because – watch the league, and it gets scary when you watch these teams. You watch Iowa State, and you go like, wowzo. And then Kansas had a huge loss this weekend, not only on the floor, but they lose Azubuike for the rest of the season. He is out now. Already Sylvia DeSosa was out. That is the best-case scenario for someone other than Kansas now to challenge and win this league. Now, normally what happens is this. Right now, at this time of the season, something always happens to Kansas. And you look at it and go like, well, that's it. That's the year. Now they're done. And they find a way somehow, some way. At the end, they're sitting there going like, sup, man? What's up? And so that this could be that, or this could be the year.
So does that mean someone in Indianapolis that has the DeSosa file on their desk that's been ignoring it, now will pull it back out?
You know what?
Huh? They haven't looked at that. They haven't been in a hurry to look at that file.
Yeah, put him back out there. You know, that would be it, wouldn't it? Would that be it? That's normally how that plays out.
Or
oh,
there's
no,
a
he's
kid,
good to go.
Or there's a kid we may have seen in Wheeling this week. We saw some really high-end basketball. Maybe one of them reclassified on the trip back and headed to That's happened before, Kirchhoff.
Or there's just a guy, their eighth guy. And
no,
then all of a sudden he's...
no, Mitch Lightfoot. I don't know if he's going to get it done.
Nice Mitch Lightfoot.
Is he still there?
Oh, yeah, he's there. Oh,
is he still there?
Yeah.
But isn't that true about basketball, though? It's, you know, in football, we can sit here and we go back and forth and we can fill hours of programming on what's West Virginia going to do today. Are they going to throw to Sills? Well, they took Sills away, but Gary Jennings was right there. And guess what? They couldn't throw the ball well, but 3 running backs stepped up and had 312. There's so many different ways to win a football game. Basketball is Nate. Well, there's a couple guys. It's a smaller roster. There's the guys you just – this isn't brain surgery here. We're not going to have to go down the roster and say, well, maybe this guy – we said it. There's the guys. They have to start producing or the team's not going to get wins. It's pretty cut and dried here.
No, that's exactly right. You only have a certain number of people that are going to play in the game, and somebody's going to have to step up and play every game, and that just hasn't happened for us yet. And I think that's really – that's why we're struggling at this point.
It wasn't a moral victory, but – they played harder, as you said, and they played better. They almost got a road win against Texas. So there's some things there. There's a couple things.
I would argue that it's a moral victory because we have now proven to ourselves that we can play defense.
Okay.
We're not giving up 90 points to St. Joe's anymore.
Right. So, I mean,
or
yeah,
83
yeah.
to
this
a
program wasn't
Rhode
built
Island
on
team.
Moral victories, right? I mean,
no,
three
no,
straight
it
Big
wasn't,
12 championships. But however, we can look at moral victory type things. That's what I said I've basically been doing. But I also, there's a part of me in these last two that have gone, man, Texas Tech wasn't as good as I thought. And
right.
That Texas team was very beatable. So you're 0-2 with some glimmers there, but you also look at those two teams and think, all right, maybe you get them in a different spot. Those were winnable games as well.
Yeah, I think along the line, Nate, that they've played hard enough to win these first two league games, which is always the start, and now you've got to get to the execution standpoint. And that's going to be the big part of it. So going back to Derek Culver, here's the skinny on Derek Culver. What you said, Brad, there are players that get weak-kneed when the thing really ratchets up and the intensity and the game is in a mode where it's going to be decided and they get wobbly. And sometimes there's sophomores and juniors and seniors that get wobbly. Mm-hmm. And I don't think Culver has that gene in his body, which to me is the first characteristic of someone that's special. And when you think of a kid that just played his fourth college basketball game without having any non-league games, and he goes after it, and I mean, he gets it, that's why Chris Beard from Texas Tech said after the game against West Virginia, he said, that guy's a pro.
Mm-hmm.
He's a pro. That's what pros do. And now the big question, you bring this up to Hugs, and Hugs always goes, yeah, so far, so good. But he's got to keep doing the right thing.
Sure.
You can't have him go off the reservation here. If he keeps doing the right thing, then he becomes a huge handful for opposing teams for the rest of the season. You don't do that. His numbers are not what freshmen put up. Go back and take a look. What he's done here in four games, and I know it's a very small sample size, and people are now scouting him. Now people are going to look like, well, his only shot's over his left shoulder. Now they're going to start scouting him, making him do other things. But to get 17-9, really, really good players don't do that early on. Deshaun Butler wasn't giving you 17-9 in his fourth game. And so that's really, really encouraging. But now you need to figure out a way, okay, how do we exploit that strength right now?
Well, you only become a pro if you look like him and then produce
every
consistently.
Game.
Consistently is what gets you to the next level, not flashes in this potential. And you're right when you say that. And actually, Culver right now is exactly what we just said about Kansas usually does. Right? Kansas usually throws somebody like, well, look at that. Where'd that guy come from? The rest of the league is now going, well, hold on. What happened there in Morgantown? Where's that guy been? Now, all of a sudden, he's setting the league on fire. But, consistency is the hardest part of the equation, Nate, right? That's what's hard. A couple moments where you have really good games, you can do. A lot of these guys at this level can do that. Can you do it every night?
And to your point about that, in order to be a pro, there's two steps where you have to have the talent and then you have to have the willingness to do it. And like you said, the consistency of it. You're not going to be consistent if you're not putting in the work every single day. If he's not in the gym doing what he's supposed to do, then he's not going to do this for the rest of the season. He'll have bad stretches, which he's a freshman. He's going to have down games. Let's not sit here and act like we can lean on him
absolutely
to carry us
right
throughout the rest of this year. We can't do that. And the other thing is he has to get his disciplinary actions in line. You cannot be a pro if you're suspended.
No, absolutely
that's not
right.
I mean, if you just watched it and you didn't know anything about him and you said, oh, it's his fourth game or whatever, and you'd go, are you kidding me? I mean, he's that good. As you said, consistency is a key. And also, how is he going to respond now that other teams know about him and start scouting him and start defending him or maybe double team him? But if he can mature in that, also, as attention goes to him, that could open up another guy.
Absolutely right. And Hugs has often said he is a very willing passer. He is not someone that as soon as that ball touches his hands, it's not coming back out. He's willing to pass. And so I do think, Hoppy, eventually they're going to double down on him.
Yeah.
And if he can get rid of the ball, then obviously you can get a little something going there. That's going to be huge. But to your point, Nate, you're exactly right. And I've also seen a lot of great freshmen. And freshmen do this. They go up and they go down. And some nights he'll have that 17-9, and you go, holy heck. And then he could give you a 5-2. And you go, like, what happened there? It's just the consistency.
Well, guys, the guys have been there 4 years are giving you 5-2. So roll
correct
with this guy.
Right, correct. So take what you're getting from the kid and try and move forward. But that's to our point. There's only four or five guys here that have to be the guy, right? You're only choosing from four or five guys. Those guys all have to be clicking each night to get wins, right? Three or four of them have to start producing every night.
In the what-if category, when the game was going on Saturday or after the game, a lot of folks are going like, what if Sagabaugh Konate was out there with Derek Culver? I mean, what would that happen? In his post-game interview with us, Hugs said that Sagabaugh Konate, now he's gone for the year.
He did.
I didn't follow up on it because I've worked with Hugs for 12 years now, and I know that when games are just over, emotionally, he's ramped up. And he says things that maybe aren't exactly 100% what it's going to be. And it didn't hit me until afterward. I probably should have said, well, let's go back here three steps. You did say, but I just kind of took it like, no, he'll be back. But at this point, that is unknown. He did elaborate on that in the post-game press conference. And he, again, said that's a family decision. We'll have to see what happens. But it is, what, January 7th? And so you know, you basically have 2 months, right? February and March, you've got 2 months. And when and if he comes back remains unknown. Personally, I'd be surprised if he doesn't come back at some point this season. But at this point, that's the big question mark. So they're moving on without even factoring him into the equation.
Well, move on. I mean, this thing's been a soap opera now for 2 months, and you can. What's the point of the what if? And even Nate, if and if he did come back in a month, you go, how does that affect the dynamics? Is he in playing shape? Do you have the same problems you had at the beginning of the season? You know, you can only coach the guys that are there. Move on. Move on.
People are acting like if Sags was playing in these last two games and we're going to win them. Sags has played in two or three of our losses earlier in the year already. It's not like he is the saving grace. Sags isn't coming out and going to give you 18 on top of Derek's 17 already. So it's not like it's going to be some magical savior if he comes back.
You defend better, though. You those rim runners. Well, but Nate, you
defend better. He played when people scored 90.
I understand.
So we're defending better without him, if you actually want to look at the stats.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, we're missing a golden opportunity. This is what we do is what ifs. We're missing a golden. I'll go even further on a what if. I would like the young man just if you get your knee right, heal this year, come back next year. Give me Culver, give me Shubway, give me Kanate across the front line.
What's going to be different next year?
Timeout. Why did you roll your eyes like that? That was a heavy eye roll.
What, at me?
No, yeah, he
eye-rolled me.
Big time.
Like my suggestion
he went around
that
like
I want Kanate, Shubway, and Culver on a front line.
Who are you going to play?
You're talking about defense.
I'm going to play all of them.
You can't
in there.
Play all of
Why?
Them. Why? You can't play three centers if you need one to produce.
I make one
which
of them
one
a four.
Do you play?
I make one
Who?
Of them a four.
Which one of those three is a four?
Oscar.
Come on.
I give
Oscar
a four.
Come on.
Oscar could be a four.
How? What has he done that makes you think he's a four?
I saw him step on jumpers. Absolutely.
Yeah,
he makes 15-foot jumpers.
Okay.
Yeah. In today's age, how many fours are only making 15-foot jumpers, not dribbling, not running the court?
Oh, he runs the court.
I know he runs the court. That's not what I mean. That's not what I mean. Run the court to spread the court. You can't have Oscar and Derek and Sags running right to the rim.
All right, fine. Don't play them all.
Then you make
give me all three on the same roster.
How does Brad have you got a guy Culver who's coming off suspension. You have Kanate who hasn't played and has a knee injury, and you have Shubway who hasn't gotten here yet.
I know.
You want to make it a fantasy team? You want to make a fantasy team?
Because here's why. We just spent a half an hour talking about guys that aren't producing. I'm tired of give me some talent. Hey. Give me guys. You got three potential pros right there. Now I know they're not playing to that level right now.
Give me some guys. Hang on. Let me rephrase what I said.
Guys, put those three guys on the roster. Who doesn't want those three on the roster?
Well, yeah. Why
am I in the minority here on that? Give me those three guys on a roster, and you guys are going to fight me on that?
Okay. Then you still have Andrew Gordon. So you have four positions held up in the center. You have four of your scholarships in one position.
Put somebody at four. I just said that.
Hey, let me ask you this. After that outburst, do you think we could play Dior Fisher and Kevin Pitsnoggle together?
Yeah, because Pitsnoggle played outside.
Okay, and none of the three that you named
do. You guys keep telling me we're moving to positionless basketball.
Do you remember,
do
you remember
hang on,
that?
Tony.
You remember that? Everyone used to say, you don't remember that? Why don't you play Pitsnoggle and Dior Fisher together? And John Beilein would go like, who's going to guard the other person?
Let me rephrase what I was saying.
Next year,
Oscar's not a four. By the time he leaves West Virginia and potentially goes to the NBA, he will have to play the four spot.
Okay, so start him early. Let's go. Give me some talent.
Come on, Brad.
Give me some guys that'll produce.
How about some guards?
Well,
there you go. How about somebody
gets it up the court? Here's what I'm saying. Fine, go recruit some guards. That's fine. I'm just saying those are all three guys that are in the program or committed to you. It's not like I'm saying I hope they get Shubway, and I hope those are guys that are already within the program confines.
Well, they are. They are kinda.
I just gave you the names of three pros, said put them on the roster at the same time, and I'm the bad guy. I don't know how that happened.
You're not the bad guy. It's just like a
I want three potential pros to be on the roster at the same time, and I'm the one that has the crazy theory.
I'm sorry. What we're doing now is coaching the guys who actually play in practice.
Thank you for saying. That's what I want. I want people who are going to show up every day and play.
Practice.
Thank you for saying potential pros.
Well, they're potential. Everybody's a potential pro until they're a pro. I know.
I was a potential pro at some point.
Well, not
Tony
only
was a potential pro.
No, never.
Brad,
so
you were
at
in
one
Iowa.
Point. I was at one
I know.
Point.
You not only that's not you. That's not true. You were not a potential pro. You were a pro, and you said no, thank you, when the G League called you this year.
Yeah, I had other plans.
They called him. They called him and said, "Why don't you come out and play?" And he went like, "Nah, I'm good.
I don't think I'm in shape.
Nah, pretty good. I'm good. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Why don't you go? And, oh, geez.
Where? What team called you?
Somebody got a hold of our old manager, Justin DePolito.
Yeah.
From the, yeah. I don't, was it Wisconsin Herd?
Uh-huh.
And said they wanted me to come out for the tryouts.
And you went like, no, thanks. I'm good.
Well, this was on the Tuesday. I was supposed to be there Friday. Sent it 260. I don't think I was getting to playing shape by Friday.
You're sitting there at 260, yeah. Speaking of the G League, Rod Strickland, former longtime NBA guy, now with the G League, was at the Cancer Research Classic basketball tournament in Wheeling this weekend watching all the games because there's an extremely high level of talent that plays in that tournament among the nation's best. And now the G League can get kids right from high school and bring them in for $100,000, $100,000+. And so you'll start to see a little bit of that too.
And he wasn't just a face. He sat there front row about 2 feet from our announcer table. He watched every game for 2 days. Didn't move.
He was there Saturday too,
all day.
Holy heck.
He did not leave.
Wow.
And he wasn't wandering around the arena. I mean, I was talking to him during timeouts. I was kidding. Hey, what do you see? What do you like? He was right there. He watched all those games.
Did you ever bring up the Kentucky? West Virginia, Kentucky.
Did not.
When he was on the assistant
staff. Did not, because he was helping me, so I didn't want to bump him out.
But I'll tell you what, that CRC, holy heck. I mean, it's mind-blowing when you look at the talent level of kids out there right now. The number five player in the nation was there, Isaiah Stewart. Holy heck, Nate.
They're just only getting bigger, more athletic.
Exactly.
Pretty
better.
Good.
I mean, just pretty doggone amazing.
Pretty good. Isaiah Cottrell was there.
Yep.
Got West Virginia target. Plays for Bishop Gorman out of Nevada. We saw him play two games.
Bruce Pearl there, the Auburn coach. You had chatted with him?
I did chat with him.
Yeah.
I did. Yeah, that's I had good. A nice talk with Coach Pearl. Yeah,
that's all good. Okay, what's your legislative schedule over there? When's that whole thing? When's that game start?
The session starts Wednesday.
Wednesday?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll be down there Wednesday and Thursday of this week. State of the State is on Wednesday night. We'll have live coverage of that. And then reaction on Thursday. Probably have the governor on Thursday. And then we got it covered, man.
So this is it. So now you start leaving us.
Oh, yeah, I'm out. So you guys, hey, Brad, say Brad, goodbye.
So we don't have to change the name to four guys. Now we're just going to our bench and we'll rotate guys in.
So, you know, in our governmental system, one of the greatest things of government that we have in the United States is the transferal of power. It is no other nation has it. Oftentimes, you know, it's a bitter situation across another governments. Not here. It is a transformation that is done.
Should we do it? Should I just get up?
Genteel. No, we just. No, listen. Here's the deal. So Hop's not going to be around. Nate's going to be coming in. Hop's going to do the legislative thing. But we do want you to know, by chance, if things change and you are in town, we always want you on the program when we tape. Okay?
I appreciate that.
If Nate can't come. No, I'm just kidding. No. So,
but Nate, it's a trade up because Nate forgot more about basketball this morning than I ever knew. So it's a good trade.
You have the open policy to come in whenever you want. All right. Music's on. This was episode number 82 of Three Guys Before the Game. Neil Brown is in. Mountaineers look for a win. And we are back at you on Thursday. See y'all. I'm